Hi folks, I am Alan Wharton. This is Cutting Through the Matrix. And if you skip to Bertrand Russell, who was a member of the Macy Group and other top think tanks for the whole planet, very prominent think tanks of Frankfurt, the Frankfurt Institute and others, and who also, it was admitted, he was also working for MI5 since World War II. He was very precise in his books because he knew the kind of society that he and his friends had it all planned. And really, if you want to know why you are in the mess we're in today, you follow his books because they're written in two ways. One for the people who think, well, he's got a good point there, and also have awfully good points, and you'll agree with him. But he's also talking quietly to the elite who already rule you as well. He didn't use crystal balls to bring in the future. He was in on the top think tanks of the planet, backed by the biggest bankers on the planet, to make it all happen. But I've talked about Bertrand Russell so many times because he was a key player. He belongs to the group that actually gave you your present-day culture. He sat on the boards of these world groups as they talked about what kind of society they were getting paid to bring in. They weren't guessing at it and playing at it. They were getting paid to do it. And they got authorization from FDR when the Frankfurt School joined. And he was part of the Frankfurt School, by the way. And they joined with the Macy Group, and FDR gave them permission, and then Truman took over and gave them more permission, more cash, to create a culture for America. And it's been entertainment culture, keep them dumb, stupid. They called it positive freedom. Negative freedom. And that's a term they use in psychology and philosophy. So what you're living through is a made-up system to serve the elite so well. Here's what Bertrand Russell said, and I've read this so many times, it's good to see other people are picking up on it, but I've read parts of his book, many of his books, but one of them was called The Scientific Outlook, and he said education in a scientific society, which you're under now, by the way, you've been under it your whole lives. It says it's got two purposes. On the one hand, to form the mind. On the other hand, to train the citizen. The Athenian concentrated on the former, the Spartans on the latter. The Spartans won, meaning brute force, but the Athenians were remembered for intellect, you see. Education in a scientific society may, I think, be best conceived after the analogy of the education provided by the Jesuits. And I'll stop right there because, you see, Cecil Rhodes formed, along with the Milner Group, and they're all Institute for International Affairs - Council on Foreign Relations, and he said it would have to be based with Jesuit techniques, and this is exactly what he's talking about. It says the Jesuits provided one sort of education for the boys who were to become ordinary men of the world, the workers, and another for those who were to become members of the Society of Jesus. In like manner, the scientific rulers will provide one kind of education for ordinary men and women, and another for those who are to become holders of scientific power. Ordinary men and women will be expected to be docile, industrious, punctual, thoughtless, and contented. Look around you. Do you understand that under the present circumstances and what's happened to countries, they're still fairly contented. They can turn on that television, get lost in nonsense, and etc. It says, of these qualities, probably contentment will be considered the most important. In order to produce it, all the researches of psychoanalysis, behaviorism, and biochemistry will be brought into play. Interesting, eh? Children will be educated from their earliest years in the manner which is found least likely to produce complexes. Such as, what he means by that is like individualism. You see, individualism is the enemy of the system. It says, almost all will be normal, happy, healthy boys or girls. Their diet will not be left to the caprices of parents, but will be such as the best biochemists recommend. Have you looked at what your children eat? Huh? This guy knew what he was talking about because, you see, they planned and were implementing all that stuff in his lifetime. They will spend much time in the open air, that was the original thought, and will be given no more book learning than is absolutely necessary. They can hardly read at all now. Upon the temperament so formed, docility will be imposed by the methods of the drill sergeant, which they used up until the 60s, early 70s in Britain, and then on to the next technique, or perhaps by the softer methods employed upon Boy Scouts. All the boys and girls will learn from an early age to be what is called cooperative. They'll have group meetings in classroom to do exactly what everybody else is doing. Initiative will be discouraged in these children, and insubordination without being punished will be scientifically trained out of them. Just reading a little bit from the Scientific Outlook by the guy who helped set up the system and under which you've been trained, actually, is the proper term for it's trained. And there's other specialists working alongside of them, like Theo Adorno and other ones, giving you your music and your movie industry culture to destroy the culture and bring it down to the most basic level so that you're even more easily controlled. You're actually addicted, you see, to entertainment. Addicted is a word. And like all addictions, it has its problems. For a healthy psyche, it cannot develop. And he goes on to say here, too, that this is the giving of these lessons to the masses. Of course, we recognize as a highly skilled undertaking reserved for the members of the governing class. All that would be required locally to replace the present-day school teacher will be a lady to keep order, though it's hoped that the children will be so well behaved that they will seldom require this estimable person's services. And of course now, too, they shun you if you don't go along with the group when you put your hand up and vote. Yeah, we're all right, and so on. These children, on the other hand, who are destined to become members of the governing class, will have a very different education. They will be selected, some before birth. You see, they were already doing, and already had been long before Russell wrote this, special selection for mating and offspring, long time before. You go back to Charles Darwin's family and see how they simply interbred with the one other family, the Wedgwoods. It says, some during the first 3 years of life and a few between the ages of 3 and 6, all the best known science will be applied to the simultaneous development of intelligence and willpower. Eugenics, chemical and thermal treatment of the embryo, and diet in early years will be used with a view to the production of the highest possible ultimate ability. The scientific outlook will be instilled from the moment that a child can talk, and throughout the early impressionable years, a child will be carefully guarded from contact with the ignorant and unscientific, that's the masses. From infancy up to 21, scientific knowledge will be poured into him, and at any rate from the age of 12 upwards, he will be specialized on those sciences for which he shows the most aptitude. At the same time, he will be taught physical toughness. He'll be encouraged to roll naked in the snow. Well, some of the modern ones would probably enjoy that, probably each other. To fast occasionally for 24 hours and run many miles on hot days to be bold. It's exactly the same thing as you find in Wells' a modern utopia. He called them the Sumerai class. Anyway, it's a sense of his high destiny will be constantly set before him, and loyalty towards his order, his own peer group, will be so axiomatic that it will never occur to him to question it. Every youth will thus be subjected to a threefold training in intelligence, in self-command, and in command of over others. If he should fail in any one of these three, he will suffer the terrible penalty of degradation to the ranks of common workers, and will be condemned for the rest of his life to associate with men and women vastly inferior to himself in education and probably in intelligence. The spur of this fear will suffice to produce industry in all but a very small minority of boys and girls of the governing class. I should also mention this would make them utterly ruthless, you understand. And he said that too, that scientific dictatorship would be utterly ruthless. It'd be uncaring because emotions are simply nonsense when it comes to pure, cold, hard logic, according to Russell. Except for the one matter of loyalty to the world state and to their own order. And he says here, the world state, folks, you're hearing all about it now. Members of the governing class will be encouraged to be adventurous and full of initiative. It will be recognized that it is their business to improve scientific technique and to keep the manual workers contented by means of continual new amusements. Are you amused, these days, folks? Are you? As those upon whom all progress depends, they must not be unduly tame, nor so drilled as to be incapable of new ideas. Unlike the children destined to be manual workers, they will have personal contact with their teacher and will be encouraged to argue with him. It will be his business to prove himself in the right if he can, and if not, to acknowledge his error gracefully. There will, however, be limits to intellectual freedom, even among the children of the governing class. See, they're not the bosses, see? They will not be allowed to question the value of science or the division of the population into manual workers and experts. They will not be allowed to go credit with ideas that perhaps that poetry is as valuable as machinery or love is as good a thing as scientific research. If such ideas do occur to any venturesome spirit, they will be received with a painful silence, and there will be a pretense that they have not been heard. So they must not be emotional. That was the same too with culling the herd and stuff. There'll be no emotions involved. A profound sense of public duty will be instilled into boys and girls of the governing class as soon as they're able to understand such an idea. They'll be taught to feel that mankind depends upon them. And it's true, eh? Oh, there's panic coming. Oh, climate change. Oh, global warming. Oh, global cooling. Ah. Then we all say, save us, save us. Eh? And that they owe benevolence to service, especially to the less fortunate classes beneath them. But let it not be supposed that they will be prigs, far from it. In other words, they won't be soft touches. They will turn off with a deprecating laugh any too portentous remark that puts into explicit words what they will all believe in their hearts. Their manners will be easy and unpleasant, and their sense of humour unfailing. The latest stage in education, the most intellectual of the governing class, will consist of training for research. Research will be highly organized, and young people will not be allowed to choose what particular piece of research they shall do. That's already in effect. They will, of course, be directed to research in those subjects for which they have shown special ability. A great deal of scientific knowledge will be concealed from all but a few. You see, that's why they choose, and I know people who've gone into different biochemists and so on and done this research. And it's the same research everyone's done before them. And if they come up with anything new or a new idea on something, it's tabooed by the head guy, the head honcho. Discoveries which upset the official view of fundamentals, if they are made by young men, will incur disfavor, and if rashly published, will lead to degradation. Young men to whom any fundamental innovation occurs will make cautious attempts to persuade the professors to view the new ideas with favor, but if these attempts fail, they will conceal their new ideas until they themselves have acquired positions of authority, by which time they will probably have forgotten them. In other words, they're not the top class, you understand. There's a bunch above them, but they have to really believe in what they're doing. When you go into the groups that work together to manage and change society, to make it all happen for this, again, this great ideal of this corporate Britain idea of running the planet, with the US too, naturally, with their Council on Foreign Relations, which is a branch of the same organization, they've been awfully successful. And you think about Bertrand Russell, and I mentioned before the books that he wrote. Maybe folk get bored with them in this day and age. Probably do, actually. Russell, remember too, he had his own experimental school. I think it was the 1920s, where he went further than most schools of that time. Remember, they had rather strict rules, much more strict about society and culture back then. But he had this kind of school, and he experimented on the children. On techniques of control and literally there were real experiments upon them. But he said in his book, the 1951 book, I've read parts of it before, The Impact of Science on Society, he said that physiology and psychology afford fields for scientific technique which still await development. The two great men, and he said Pavlov, remember, Pavlov did all experiments with animals to shock them and recondition them and literally torture them into changing behavior. And they were using drugs as well, of course. So very important. So you have real physical torture, really, then drugs, then psychology used, all together. And it wasn't just to train dogs, it was to train people. I hope you understand it. You know? So, this is a afford field for scientific technique, which still awaits development. The two great men, Pavlov and Freud, have laid the foundation. And even saying that means that Pavlov and Freud are part of an organization that pre-existed and were probably selected themselves, these characters, for their roles in society. I guarantee you that's how it happened. Anyway, so it still awaits development. The two great men, blah, blah, blah. And he says, but I do not accept the view that they are in any essential conflict, but what structure will be built on their foundation is still in doubt. It's not quite sure. I think the subject which will be of most importance politically is mass psychology. Its importance has been enormously increased by the growth of modern methods of propaganda. Of these, the most influential is what is called education. Religion plays a part, though a diminishing one. The press. Now the press now is TV and internet, really. You get it all from internet. And it says, and the cinema, movies, and the radio play an increasing part. It may be hoped that in time anybody will be able to persuade anybody of anything if he can catch the patient young and is provided by the state with money and equipment. Well, that's all been well done before I was even, you know, born. And he also said that the subject will make great strides when it's taken up by scientists under a scientific dictatorship, for those who don't quite get it yet. You're ruled by experts, supposedly. The term expert. He even mentions that they train you to believe in experts and to be unsure of yourself. You'd always obey an expert. That's been done. The social psychologists of the future will have a number of classes of school children on whom they will try different methods of producing an unshakable conviction that snow is black. Now, take that topic into anything that you want, right? Huh? Boy, girl, whatever. Unshakable conviction that snow is black. He's giving you a simple tongue-in-cheek example here. Various results will soon be arrived at. First, that the influence of home is obstructive. Second, because we're rid of the home and parental input into the child's behaviour. Second, that not much can be done unless indoctrination begins before the age of 10. Third, that verses set to music and repeatedly intoned are very effective. Fourth, that the opinion that snow is white must be held to show a morbid taste for eccentricity. So just being eccentric, you see. But I anticipate, it says, it's for future scientists to make these maxims precise and discover exactly how much it costs per head. So it's a cost-effective to make the children believe the snow is black and how much less it would cost to make them believe it's dark grey. So he's, again, tongue-in-cheek, is saying, that, yeah, they can make them believe anything you want, and we'll find the cheapest way to do it. He also said that although the science will be diligently studied, it will be rigidly confined to the governing class. The governing class, for those who don't get it. You don't elect the governing class. And I don't really mean that. He's not talking about politicians. The populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated. When the technique has been perfected, every government that has been in charge of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the need of armies or policemen. So you understand it. You also talk about the lethal chamber for children who are very clever. And they'd always test and find the clever ones, you see. He said, also said, too, that they would use different techniques on everybody to make people docile is awfully important. He says, in like manner, the scientific rules will provide one kind of education for ordinary men and women and another for those who are to become holders of scientific power. Ordinary men and women will be expected to be docile, industrious, punctual, thoughtless, and contented. Contented, remember? Of these qualities, probably that contentment will be considered the most important. In order to produce all the researches of psychoanalysis, behaviorism, and biochemistry will be brought into play, some with drugs as well. All the things that Aldous Huxley had mentioned in the 1930s, with the different grades of humanity they create in Brave New World. All the boys and girls will learn from an early age to be what is called cooperative. That is, to do exactly what everybody is doing, everybody else. And that's what they're doing. It's all PC stuff and so on and so on. And anyone who shows leadership qualities will be crushed, basically. And now they're drugging the boys, especially, are getting drugged at school by prescriptions. You think it's all accidental? Because he talks about this, doesn't he? Using biochemistry and so on. So anyway, you'll be cooperative and you'll see the same things because you don't want to offend anybody else, blah, 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 blah. It's all there. and you'll do what everybody else is doing. Initiative will be discouraged in these children, and insubordination without being punished will be scientifically trained out of them. And that's what they do in school now with groupthink and so on. And you're pushed to the side and kind of shunned. Everybody wants to belong to the peer group. When you're getting shunned, you feel guilty and rotten. And so you just cave in and go along with them and agree with them. And I remember that book was written, I think, in 1951 or published then. It says, except for the one matter of loyalty to the world states, start with the children, the ruling class ones, and to their own order, members of the governing class will be encouraged to be adventurous, full of initiative, and will be recognized that it is their business to improve scientific technique and to keep the manual workers contented by means of continual new amusements. Does that ring bells? Remember, they're using the star machinery, the star techniques of making the star machinery for different people who are now in charge of internet and so on, aren't they? But remember too, when it came to testing children who were brights and who are not of the ruling class, and it says, on those rare occasions when a boy or girl who has passed the age at which is usual to determine social status shows such marked ability as to seem the intellectual equal of the rulers, a difficult situation will arise requiring serious consideration. If the youth is content to abandon his previous associates and to throw in his lot wholeheartedly with the rulers, he may, after suitable tests, be promoted. But if he shows any regrettable solidarity with his previous associates, meaning his own class, the rulers will reluctantly conclude that there's nothing to be done with him except to send him to the lethal chamber before his ill-disciplined intelligence has had time to spread revolt. This will be a painful duty to the rulers, but I think they will not shrink from performing it. Because, in other words, if you're really clever and you understand what's going on, you'll be a threat to them. Now, they don't really mean what they say, the big boy. They don't plan and then give you chances to say your bit and all that kind of stuff. Now, they come after you. And they also talked about basically a pharmacologically manipulated slave, how to create them, and even living in a concentration camp, he said, of the mind. And they would use propaganda and psychotropic drugs to keep you there, basically, to love your servitude, as Huxley's talked about it, of course. So it's all there, really. There's nothing to guess at, especially when you've watched it your whole life long unfold and been implemented with goodness knows how many different organizations, all worked from the pyramidal top, by the way. And there's thousands of these organizations, all run from the pyramid cap. Remember, too, that this British Council is part of the organization where they pick youngsters from all over the planet and they educate them into all the PC stuff to be the exact good robotic rulers and they'll be well rewarded for doing it, and they'll make sure the whole culture is destroyed in the process of their own countries as they go all PC and become implement what I've just talked about for the last few minutes, actually. Quite something.
War has been throughout history the chief source of social cohesion, and since science began, it has been the strongest incentive to technical progress. Large groups have a better chance of victory than small ones, and therefore the usual result of war is to make states larger. In any given state of technique, there is a limit to size. The Roman Empire was stopped by German forests and African deserts. The British conquests in India were halted by the Himalayas. Napoleon was defeated by the Russian winter, and before the telegraph, large empires tended to break up because they could not be effectively controlled from a center. Communications have been hitherto the chief factor limiting the size of empires. In antiquity, the Persians and the Romans depended upon roads. But since nothing travelled faster than a horse, empires became unmanageable when the distance from the capital to the frontier was very great. This difficulty was diminished by railways and the telegraph, and is on the point of disappearing with the improvement of the long-range bomber. There would now be no technical difficulty but a single worldwide empire. Since war is likely to become more destructive of human life than it has been in recent centuries, unification under a single government is probably necessary unless we are to acquiesce in either a return to barbarism or the extinction of the human race. The one thing he omits here, and you'll find this is to lead you towards a mode of thinking where you think, well, he's right there, yeah, he's reasonable there. And yeah, that's understandable, that makes sense. It makes sense. He's using a form of logic. And remember that Bertrand Russell was into the philosophies. He was a philosopher as well as a mathematician. And he understood rhetoric, the ability of speaking and formulating, to do this very thing, to guide you into a mode of thinking where you can identify with the first half a dozen or 10 or 12 topics he brings up and his solutions to them. And then once you've swallowed that, he's guiding you into other areas and you're not on guard anymore. He's taking you along a way of thinking which you will agree to. This is actually an exercise in logic, you might say. They taught this in ancient Greece and Rome. There is, it must be confessed, a psychological difficulty about a single world government. The chief source of social cohesion in the past, I repeat, has been war. The passions that inspire a feeling of unity are hate and fear. Now, remember, he's talking about empire building. He doesn't mention that the system that he belonged to happened to be behind the wars. The aristocracy mixed with the bankers, business bankers aristocracy. The ordinary people don't cause wars. It doesn't happen. They don't have the finances to start wars, and it's the last thing on their mind is going off across the sea to kill people when they've got a wife and family at home. At least they used to, anyway. So he's already omitted the major cause of wars. It's not just the people being annoyed and upset about something. It's getting the people upset and annoyed so they'll join the militaries and are taken off to fight for an agenda which they really never understand. They think they understand. He says, these depend upon the existence of an enemy, actual or potential. It seems to follow that a world government could only be kept in being by force, not by spontaneous loyalty that now inspires a nation at war. During war, all the patriotic symbols and the tribal symbols are pulled out and waved, and brass bands go, and speeches are made, and tears fill the eyes, and all this kind of stuff to get us emotionally involved. That's emotive involvement. But as he said, now he should know this because he attended the big meetings with the Royal Institute of International Affairs and all the other British Empire organizations that ran the world right up until his time. He was born at the tail end of the predominant British rule, a British Empire. And in this book, I think, was published in around the 1952, I think it was, first published. And it was taken from writings from speeches he'd given at different universities. The Ruskin, Dean Rusk, remember, the guy who inspired Cecil Rhodes, the college in Oxford, and at Columbia University, New York. In the last few chapters were at Lloyd Roberts' lecture given at the Royal Society of Medicine, London. in 1949 because he was involved in eugenics and population reduction. So the book is geared and written in such a way to build up to different things. And he has things at the beginning which you can identify with, believe, and understand. The rest of it is to try and guide your thoughts to support this agenda. And he's already admitted that it would seem to follow that a world government could only be kept in being by force. They couldn't use the old techniques of having an enemy to fight because it would be an unseen enemy. The enemy, of course, we've found now is terrorism, which is everywhere. It could be you, it could be yourself, and you don't know it yet. You need a psychologist to do a test on you, and they'll find out, or maybe measure your skull or the lobes of your ear. To continue, so far I have been considering only techniques derived from physics and chemistry. These have, up to the present, been the most important, but biology, physiology and psychology are likely in the long run to affect human life quite as much as physics and chemistry. And then he goes into the next kicker. Take the first question of food and population. At present, the population of the globe is increasing at the rate of about 20 million a year. I love these statistics. There are lies, damn lies, and then there are statistics. If it's scientific, it must be true. Most of this increase is in Russia and Southeast Asia. The population of Western Europe and the United States is nearly stationary. Meanwhile, the food supply of the world as a whole threatens to diminish as a result of unwise methods of cultivation and destruction of forests. This is an explosive situation. Left to itself, it must lead to a food shortage and thence to a world war. Technique, however, makes other issues possible. Vital statistics in the West are dominated by medicine and birth control. The one diminishes the deaths, the other the births. The result is that the average age in the West increases. There's a smaller percentage of young people and a larger percentage of old people. The danger of a world shortage of food may be averted for a time by improvements in the technique of agriculture. But if population continues to increase at the present rate, such improvements cannot long suffice. There will then be two groups, one poor with an increasing population, the other rich with a stationary population. Such a situation can hardly fail to lead to world war. He keeps telling you this over and over. You see, he's making a conclusion for you without telling you, well, it was himself, the bankers and the class he belonged to, that made the wars in the past. If there is not to be an endless succession of wars, population will have to become stationary throughout the world. And this will probably have to be done in many countries as a result of governmental measures. Making laws of sterilization is what he's talking about here. He says, this will require an extension of scientific technique into very intimate matters. He goes on to say, there are, however, two other possibilities. War may become so destructive that, at any rate for a time, there's no danger of overpopulation, or the scientific nations may be defeated, and anarchy may destroy scientific technique. Biology is likely to affect human life through the study of heredity. They're talking about genetics there to see if you have, or you're prone to diseases or to pass them on, genetically born diseases. Without science, men have changed domestic animals and food plants enormously in advantageous ways. It may be assumed that they will change them much more and much more quickly by bringing the science of genetics to bear. Now, they knew, this is in the 1950s, he's given these talks, these lectures. A member of the largest social control organizations of the British Empire. He knew the agendas. He was part of the agendas. And he'll couch things in such a way it doesn't sound so terrible. Perhaps even it may become possibly artificially to induce desirable mutations in genes. Hitherto the only mutations that can be artificially caused are neutral or harmful. In any case, it is pretty certain that scientific technique will very soon effect great improvements in the animals and plants and are useful to that are useful to man. If you go back to Rutherford in the 1920s, the great mathematician, he was employed with an organization working on genetics before supposedly they discovered them. But that was in his own book. So what he's telling you here, Russell's telling you, is partial truth. They'd already found ways to mutate genes in a desirable direction, as he would say. But he mustn't let the public know that at that time. And what they're talking about too is if you weren't quite up to a standard, because obviously if they're talking about what's desirable and undesirable, there must be standards set for what is desirable for IQ and different things. Therefore, they would enhance the person, the fetus, they would remove the ones they would call defective and put in the ones which would be more effective. Harking back to Plato's Republic of breeding humans for specific tasks, well, here we go again. These guys all were tremendous fans and advocates of Plato, because this is a very, very old society that runs the world. When such methods of modifying the congenital character of animals and plants have been pursued long enough to make their success obvious, it is probable that there will be a powerful movement for applying scientific methods to human propagation. There would at first be strong religious and emotional obstacles to the adoption of such a policy. But suppose, say, Russia were able to overcome these obstacles and to breed a race stronger, more intelligent, and more resistant to disease than any race of men that has hitherto existed. And supposing the other nations perceived that unless they followed suit, they would be defeated in war, then either the other nations would voluntarily forgo their prejudices, or after defeat, they would be compelled to forgo them. Any scientific technique, however beastly, is bound to spread if it isn't useful in war. So he's advocating even. And see, what he's doing is telling you what had been discussed. All these different possibilities had been discussed over and over at higher level meetings. How could he get the general populations of the world to go along with this? And they could cause wars and do exactly as he suggested. It's odd that the same people who apparently went all out to defeat Hitler and his eugenics programs seem to be identical in their nature and their agenda to Hitler, isn't it? Isn't that an interesting little connection?
Let's go back to a guy who definitely was hailed. They always give you your heroes, even though they're monsters, some of them. But it is interesting to read them and to remind yourself of things. Eh? People who really were part of what was called the World Empire system. It's still on the go, big time, it's even closer to than ever before. And Bertrand Russell, who talked about the impact of science on society. You got to try and remember, don't overdose yourself with data. As I say, there's so much data, conflicting data thrown at you all the time. But understand what's important to you. Most folk won't care. They really have been domesticated. And they believe that, well, there's always specialists taking care of us. Well, when did that become part of democracy? Specialists taking care of all everything? Really? Is that what you're a perpetual child you're being taken care of? Did you give permission to have all your rights to take care of yourself taken away from you? Every statement demands a question. So here we have what he says, what Russell said, right? And his whole agenda, too, was there's too many of the wrong people, blah, 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 blah. Same thing. He says on page 50, he says, Fichte laid it down, the philosopher, that education should aim at destroying free will. I'll repeat that for the harder thinking. Fichte said, or he laid it down, that education should aim at destroying free will, so that after pupils have left school, they shall be incapable for the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. But in his day, this was an unattainable ideal. What he regarded as the best system in existence produced Karl Marx. I'd actually say it produced more than just Karl Marx. Here today, we're told that what you see isn't real. It's something else, and you better go along with it. Anyway, he says, in the future, such failures are not likely to occur where there is dictatorship. You see, you're really under a form of dictatorship. If you don't have a say in anything, and you better obey, and don't say what you think, and don't say what you see, you're forbidden to. You're not in a democracy, folks. So he says, really, it's a form of dictatorship. Of course it is. Doesn't matter if it's an oligarchy or whatever of scientists, it's a straw dictatorship type of system. It is dictated to you, ordered, see? And they'll use diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers that will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves as happy because the government will tell them that they are so. You're happy, aren't you? Look at all the ads on TV. Smiling faces everywhere. A totalitarian government with a scientific bent might do things to us would seem horrifying. Then he goes into the Nazis, who were eugenicists. They praised Britain and they praised the US and the Rockefeller boys and so on. And the Cold Springs Harbor, science labs, etc. And they used all their techniques that actually put them into effect openly, okay, more openly, I'd say. And eugenics, of course. Because they were more scientific than the present rulers of Russia and more inclined towards the sort of atrocities that I've said that I have in mind, he says, that I have in mind. This is ours. He's thinking of doing, right? So the Nazis were more inclined towards the sort of atrocities that I have in mind, he says. They were said, and I do not know how much truth is, to use prisoners in concentration camps as material for all kinds of experiments, some involving death after much pain. By the way, it's amazing how they always hammer Germany, even though the Germans copied it all to say from Britain. And the eugenicists and the Darwinian groups too, they're still on the go. The actual eugenics groups have changed their name, but they're still on the go. And the groups in America, it's just astonishing, isn't it? So the loser always gets hammered. And Julian Huxley had to reinvent the term for eugenics because he didn't even hesitate to carry on with the whole eugenics agenda after World War II. So anyway, he says that the Soviets didn't have the same kind of scientific abilities or whatever. But he says that's what they would use. As you all think you're happy, because a totalitarian government will tell you so. Do you understand that you are in a sci-fi? If you haven't read Acres of Skin, you should read it. It's a modern book about all the prisoners used in American prisons and elsewhere. For medical experiments, and they injected cancer cells in them and all kinds of things. It's quite the read for those that can handle it. And this is in so-called peacetime. So he talks about all this experimentation on humans and camps, some involving death after much pain. If they had survived, they would probably have soon taken to scientific breeding. Any nation which adopts this practice will, within a generation, secure great military advantages. I mean, they're talking about literally genetic manipulations and eventually what they used to call test tube babies, and then out of the womb children. And it says here, a secure graded military environment. So you would create all those X-Files and stuff came from. Somebody made that up. It was about all the possibilities that scientists had envisaged long ago as they sat around their big tables discussing things they could work towards. And how could they create the super soldiers? Lots of articles over many years about super soldiers, how to create a super soldier, and even how to take away their complete, any kind of fear they might have, just literally silence that part of the brain where fear resides in them, things like that. Remember, the whole point is to win for those who rule. So he talks about great military advantages, and I'll put up the article too about China. And this been more open, I think, really, has gone ahead with a lot of this kind of testing of a purpose-made person, basically. And again, he'd gone forever with these. Just each area I'm talking about here is just almost endless with data now.
A quote from Bertrand Russell, who knew the whole agenda. He worked his whole life on this agenda for his own class. And he wrote two styles of books. One was meant for the masses and for the NGOs that followed him and who would help push his agenda through. And another set of books for his own particular aristocratic, noble class. The latter are very, very expensive books, not meant to be read by commoners, for he outlined the plans quite succinctly. And there was a book he called Marriage and Morals. And chapter 18, the title is of that chapter is Eugenics. And it says here, this is what he says. He says, religion has existed since before the dawn of history, while science has existed for at most four centuries. But when science has become old and venerable, it will control our lives as much as religion has ever done. I foresee the time when all who care for the freedom of the human spirit will have to rebel against a scientific tyranny. And here's the little adage at the end, though, that negates what I just told you. Nevertheless, if there is to be a tyranny, it is better that it should be scientific. And that really says it all, because we're under it, so much so that Joe Average is a product of it. Their mind and what they think, their perceptions, the conglomeration of their perceptions all working together, the fantasy world they live in is the outcome of it.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.